Hello, fellow crypto leftists. Thank you for tuning in. This is the second episode of the Blockchain Socialist podcast, and I just wanted to give a couple of messages before we get into it. First, I wanted to say make sure you guys are safe out there. We're currently in the middle of what is likely to be a pandemic with COVID-19, so please be safe. Don't go into crowded places and to not put yourself in danger. Considering that we are likely about to go into a recession because of this virus, I would highly recommend that everyone move their cryptocurrency that they may have held in a centralized exchange and move it into their personal wallets. What's happened in the past is that exchanges, when they go under, they take all the cryptocurrency that's being held on them with them. And the people who did not take out the cryptocurrency before then lost it. So please take the necessary precautions now so you don't regret it in the future. Okay, now that we got that out of the way, in this interview, I'll be speaking to Ben Ark, also known as BTC Socialist on Twitter. He is one of the OG socialists in the crypto space, and I had a great talk with him. So I hope you guys enjoy. All of this wouldn't be possible, of course, without the help and support of my patrons. So if you do enjoy this interview, please consider taking a look at my Patreon page. I've also now gotten my podcast onto the major podcast platforms. So besides SoundCloud, you can also find my podcasts now being posted on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, and Podcast Addict. So subscribe to it in any of those platforms that you use. And here's the interview.
But then, I mean, it's not common. I mean, that's common in general lefties, you know, just in society, are kind of quieter, aren't they, you know?
Yeah, I mean, except for like, I mean it's more like the image of the left is, you know, what the right, you know, the SJW type of bullshit. I mean, that's just what the media likes to portray lefties as when they're just fucking, you know, normal people who like normal stuff or not so normal stuff.
Yeah. I think as well, I mean, I suppose, like, I mean, you know, the those who had like an interest in something like gold were able to see, so the libertarian quarter were able to see value in Bitcoin fairly early on. So it was probably predominantly libertarian, right-wing libertarian. Although in saying that, so I always like to remind people that, you know, Jude Milhorn, who actually coined the phrase cypherpunk, was a lefty. So even within cypherpunks, there were, you know, there was kind of a left influence, you know. It was I mean, particularly when people working on free and open source software, within the free software movement, there was a lot of sort of lefty influence. So arguably at the beginning of Bitcoin, a lot of the people who were interested in it were kind of interested in gold. And how they thought, you know, it was a good form of money, and then they kind of were quite easy. It was quite easy for them to kind of see value in Bitcoin. But then in saying that, you had someone like Amir Taki working on Bitcoin pretty early on, and he's, you know, I wouldn't want to speak on his politics, but I would kind of align him more to the left. I do feel for a period. It felt very, very quiet out there. And that, as soon as I kind of raised the flag, it's probably as you find as well, you have a lot of people contacting you and saying, yeah, man, carry on, do this, you know, and like they're encouraged and that they're happy that you kind of.
I mean, I don't know, I get both. I mean, I get, it's very, very polarizing. Actually, this is my first interview to do for my podcast. So it's great to see some solidarity amongst some commies in the crypto space. I really like, I think I really want to call this the crypto commie circle jerk. That was really good. Yeah. That was pretty good when you sent me that.
Well, I mean, it's quite a rare occurrence, isn't it? I don't mean to cut it, but it's quite a rare occurrence. Like the right wingers will often have like a circle jerk over like, you know, Mises or something, and they have a great old time. And they don't have anyone opposing their opinions. So it's quite nice for us to be able to just have our own little space where we can, you know.
Yeah, for sure. That's definitely what...
Reinforce certain theories.
Definitely what I'm trying to do with my platform, just to give people on the left and in crypto and in blockchain to just talk and spread ideas and, you know, become friends. But maybe I'll just start with the beginning. I'm curious to hear sort of your story and how you first got into Bitcoin and what were your initial thoughts about it. Were you a socialist first, or were you into Bitcoin first?
Yeah, so I've always been something of a lefty, but I thought that, I don't know, I kind of felt like it was as good as it gets. You know, it's I couldn't see a way to make a better system easily. So I was kind of like a defeated lefty, which tried to make the most of the sort of the current way in which we produce things or whatever. But then when I became more aware of, say, the, you know, the free software movement, and then eventually Bitcoin, I started to see that people were building systems which were controlled and regulated by the community as a whole, and then it wouldn't be a huge leap. I think maybe probably a few years in when people started talking about DAOs and things. And then, you know, when I started hearing, you know, talk about communities making decisions over, you know, decisions in which, or what a DAO would do, then I started to think that maybe these tools could be used to build decision making by consensus among a large community of people. I mean, when you talk about things like consensus, that's something which people on the left, the socialists, have been really struggling with. Like, you know, when you get a lot of people in a room and you try and get them to make a decision, it's actually quite hard without having an authoritarian figure just telling them what to do. That's kind of much easier and more efficient system if the person who's telling what to do kind of knows what they're doing. But you know, ideally, in order to liberate people, obviously you want everybody to have a say in the decision making. So it was quite nice to see the consensus experiments which were happening in Bitcoin, and then which were kind of being extended out into other projects as well, which I got quite excited about. And then I, you know, like yourself, I kind of looked within the Bitcoin community and I thought, wow, no one's sort of speaking from the left here. So I thought I'd kind of raise the flag up, gave myself a goofy name on Twitter. And I kind of raised the flag up for Bitcoiners on the left and see if anyone would respond favorably or unfavorably, and we could chat about it, whatever. You know, I'm all into talking and, you know, obviously the dialectics. I was quite encouraged, like when I actually went out to Bitcoin conferences or went out to sort of hack events or building things, I realized, particularly in Europe, there's a lot of sort of lefty anarchist type builders and hackers within the Bitcoin community. I mean, I can't really speak about sort of the wider cryptocurrency stroke blockchain community, but, you know, so I'll just talk, you know, on Bitcoin and on maybe on the Lightning Network side of Bitcoin. But I was encouraged to find there was a lot of people who would align politically on the left. And then I would also, even people working, you know, on a protocol, more profound level, there were people who were sort of maybe lefty, or if not lefty. I mean, certainly I think within Bitcoin core development, there's a large proportion are just agnostic when it comes politically. You know, they don't pull politics into protocol development. You know, they probably see it as goofy as pulling politics into something like email. You know, is email political? Is, right, I don't know, TCP political? So they just want to build the best software they can to solve the problems in which, you know, they need to solve. So this is how I got into Bitcoin.
Was it a slow build up then?
And then I met a bunch of other kind of lefty people, and I thought, okay, yeah, cool, I'm going to carry on doing what I'm doing. I tried to have like constructive conversations with some of the people on the right, the libertarians. But I mean, within Bitcoin, I suppose we have the more extreme end of right libertarian types. So it's quite hard to. I mean, I've never blocked or muted anybody on Twitter, but plenty of people have blocked and muted me. Yeah, quite the opposite. Yeah, I'm blocked and right now. I mean, so again, within Bitcoin, you when you have a free and open source system and it's working as well, it's a resource. And any resource in which you use, which isn't owned by a person, it's owned by a community or it's a natural resource, I feel personally that you have a duty of care, that you need to contribute back, that you need to support it, that you need to try and help it grow. So I, you know, within Bitcoin, like the best way I thought to kind of help it grow was to try and encourage something of a maker community. I realized there weren't many people, you know, using kind of like Arduino-y type things to send and receive Bitcoin, little hardware devices and retrofitting, I don't know, things to accept Bitcoin. So I thought maybe this is where I could add some value. I'd done a little bit, some rudimentary electronics in the past, and I kind of knew my way, a little bit way around a microcontroller. And I realized that I could take small computer components and then I could retrofit them into devices and get them to accept Bitcoin, real world devices. And I just wondered if I could help encourage more of a maker community. And I think, you know, me and a couple of others, I think we've really helped do that within Bitcoin. There's now quite a lot of people producing interesting DIY, you know, point of sale terminals and a retrofitting real world things to accept Bitcoin. Yeah, I mean, that's again. So I'll just keep bringing us back to the left. You know, Marx, when he talked about something like communism, he said it was each to his own ability, each to his own needs. So the idea is that, you know, you have each to your own need, you can use this resource however much you want it. But then to your own ability, you contribute where you can. And that's kind of communism in Marx's, how he would sum up communism, the communist mantra. And I kind of see Bitcoin like that. It's a natural resource, each to his own need. You can just use the system, it's absolutely fine. It's like any free and open source software project. If you use it a lot, then, you know, there's a natural human want and urge to kind of help it grow and contribute back. A lot of people within Bitcoin, they kind of fight that and say, no, it's just me being selfish. You know, I build tools I want to use. But it's like, yeah, but are you not also making them for other people to use? And like, isn't some of your decision making around that? And isn't it nice that other people use these tools and build on top of them as well? So I think sometimes they try and kind of fight that.
I'm just curious, like the first, like what was the reason why, what that pulled you into the Bitcoin space? I mean, was it like, did you read about it and you're like, oh wow, there's Bitcoin. A lot of it. Sorry.
I mean, we spoke, I don't know if it was probably off air, but we spoke a little bit about Yanis Varoufakis. He's, I mean, as a student of Keynes, or more on the Keynesian side, he's very much into this idea of an apolitical money. You know, if you take politics out of money, out of a world reserve currency, for example, then the world can become much stabler. You know, when the British pound was a world reserve currency, you know, we enslaved the Chinese into opium smoking to keep our currency strong. You know, we conquered and ruled over in India, and we were really, really, really quite vicious. And in order to keep the British pound as the world reserve currency, and keep our economy strong, because we became greedy as an island. You know, we enjoyed all the money which was streaming back into Britain. And then post World War II, when the dollar had world dominance and was 50% of the world's economy was dollar based, then the US dollar became the world reserve currency. If you think about all the conflicts which have happened, particularly on the US side, I mean, how much of it is them trying to keep the dollar as the world reserve currency that is the strongest currency? It's kind of too much of a responsibility for a government or a country to have their currency as the world reserve currency. It'd be better if it were an apolitical form of exchange which could be used like a gold or something, rather than a currency which is backed by a government. And I thought Bitcoin could be that. Keynes when you went to Bretton Woods originally, Pope proposed something called the Bancor, which was kind of like a decentralized medium of exchange. It was predominantly between countries, like a kind of clearing currency. But he wanted it to be apolitical. He said, look, if we're going into this future, we need, in order to not have conflict, you know, whatever people say about Keynes, he spent his whole life trying to prevent conflict. Because he lived through two wars, had the First World War and the Second World War, which was an economist of both. So he wanted an apolitical backed money. And then within Bitcoin, that's probably the first thing I saw about Bitcoin, which I really quite liked. I thought we could have, if this were, this is, this, this has, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things which I liked about Bitcoin. The idea of having some digitally scarce, I thought was cool, you know.
But do you think
cryptographically secure? You're using maths to ensure that this thing is always going to be digitally scarce and you can have ownership over it. Then I like that too, but maybe more because of the gaming side of things. You know, I'd had stuff in computer games in the past, and then I'd lost those things, or they'd produce more of those things, and the thing I had became worth less value. And it was kind of like, well, that sucks. You know, in this digital world, I want something which kind of has a value. Which I can use to exchange, it isn't going to lose its value or whatever, or a central party can't print more of. So there was kind of, yeah, so there was that kind of element, and there was also kind of the apolitical element was probably the thing which really first drew me towards Bitcoin. And then the free and open source, it's free and open source software. I like that. That's kind of, I came from sort of the free and open source software side. And that kind of drove me towards Bitcoin. So they were probably the three elements which I most saw value in something like Bitcoin for.
Yeah. Do you think, I mean, just as a add-on question to that, do you think that Bitcoin really is apolitical? Like it is, I think it's interesting the point about, I agree. I don't think any one country should have the world reserve of money. I mean, the US has, I mean, it uses that power for imperialistic goals, but at the same time, Bitcoin can be a little bit political in the sense that, I mean, miners have quite a bit of power over the Bitcoin network.
Well, and I mean, this was the other thing. So that was one of my worries, in fact, was the amount of power which miners had over Bitcoin. It's always a struggle. But then when we had the user activated soft fork, you know, stuff, and we had the Node2x movement, I realized that, in fact, Bitcoin is controlled and regulated by the users. The miners are employed by the network, and they're rewarded from the network. They're employed to secure the network, basically. And then we reward them for doing that security work. You know, I think often in history, security guards thought that they actually had control over a system or over, I don't know, over something, but then actually no, they're just being employed by the system to secure the system, and that was, you know, that was made obvious with the user activated soft fork. So actually, that at that point I was like, okay, I'm all in Bitcoin now. This is, you know, we have built a consensus mechanism which is truly centralized and controlled and regulated by the users as a whole, as opposed to controlled by, you know, say the miners, for example. So you say they have power, but I mean, they have less power than it first appears.
Okay. So you are the original BTC socialist, the Bitcoin socialist. So I was curious because, I mean, we talked about this before, but in this space there's so many right-wing libertarians a lot of the time, or like people who are, I mean, maybe not even like a right-wing libertarian, but I mean, just some people who just don't like socialism. And if you mention it, you know, they like to think that crypto is apolitical and, you know, they have their own ideas. So just curious if you can explain a bit how people respond to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that, if you want decentralized control, and the means of production controlled and regulated by the community, controlled or regulated by the community as a whole, which is the dictionary definition of something like socialism, there are some tools you can use to try and do that. So you can use something like state, you know. So the state can take taxes and from people, and then it can build a health service, or it can build schools, or I don't know, whatever else. the roads. But that's a tool to try and achieve an end, and the end being that the means of production is controlled or regulated by the community as a whole. Doesn't necessarily mean state is good. It's not. It's very buggy. But it's kind of like, I would say, for something like education, I would say it's important for people to have access to education. And I would say that state probably is the best system we currently have for education. I would say for production, state's not very good at all. You know, it's probably the one, you know, it's much better to have a free market of entrepreneurs, of businesses, to be able to produce the things we need. If you give that power to state, as we saw with, you know, Lenin, then you end up with just a tyranny, and also bad decision making. They can't make the right decisions to be able to produce the things people actually want. I did warn you that I have a tendency to waffle on. Oh, right. So it's important to first define what socialism is. And if you just find socialism is just that the means of production is and manufacturing is controlled or regulated by the community as a whole. So how do you achieve that? You know, it's one way to achieve it is through something like a cooperative. But cooperatives are clunky, and decision-making by consensus is hard, as we know in Bitcoin. So if you take your average cooperative, and then if it competes against, you know, a feudalist corporate structure where one person is just making decisions, then the feudalist corporate structure is going to win, because the cooperative is so clunky and it's so hard to manage that sort of decision-making, that in a free market, the feudalist structure is going to win. Does that mean that you shouldn't try and make cooperatives work better and try and improve the tools they use to try and make that cooperative more effective? I don't think it does. You know, I think that sort of a thought experiment I like to do with some of the righty people is like, say, okay, you've got two Amazons, you've got normal Amazon, and then you've got decentralized Amazon. Both products in both these Amazons are worth they cost the exact same amount of money. So you go on the website, either go to Amazon.com or you go to theAmazon.com. And this is completely hypothetical, and it's probably a load of bollocks, and it could never ever exist because, you know, free markets and all, they're great, and you're never going to be able to get the value of the products down to the right level to be able to compete. But let's just do a thought experiment. So you've got centralized Amazon, Amazon.com, and you've got decentralized Amazon, theAmazon.com. The products are exactly the same on both. In both Amazons, they both cost exactly the same. The only difference is that the de-Amazon, decentralized Amazon, more or less all the value which is produced by the products goes to the people actually producing the products. There's a very small fraction which maybe goes into, you know, bounties for de-Amazon software, whereas Amazon.com, you know, obviously some of that surplus value goes to Jeff Bezos, and that's why he's, you know, becoming fast on his way to become the world's first trillionaire. So you have these two Amazons. Now you make the decision to buy a product. Which Amazon are you going to pick? And then the righties, the libertarians, they always say, well, you know, where the product's cheaper. I'm like, in this thought experiment, they're both everything costs the same on both platforms. Which one are you going to pick? And then the ones who are honest, they will say, well, I'm going to go for the de-Amazon one. Okay, why are you going to go for the de-Amazon? Well, because I understand that the people are getting more. But it's impossible. It's never going to happen. I'm like, yeah, it's impossible. It's never going to happen. But you understand that the people who are producing those things are going to get more of the value. They're not going to lose that surplus value. You know, they're going to be better off. When you buy those products, you know that money is going to actually towards the budget, more towards the people who actually produce the products. And I think that's just again, back to that different dictionary definition of socialism, that production, manufacturing is controlled.
But is this how you explain socialism whenever you have, you know, your maybe right libertarian friends in the Bitcoin space?
I mean, this is how, so socialism is the advocation of that. So working towards that, it's not enforcing that. It's not like forcing your people to have that system. It's just saying you're advocating that system actually liberates people better than a centralized system, and just recognizing that. So I think maybe a socialist, like,
do they? I mean, do you think you changed their minds a little bit about, like, you know, what your beliefs are and things like that?
I think so. I mean, so I
they become
yeah, within
friendlier.
Bitcoin, I've spoken to, pardon?
They become friendlier.
Yeah, no, so look at someone like Rockstar Dev, who works on BTC Pay server. Don't know why that took me so long to think of. Yeah, he's a fantastic developer, okay? He's from an ex-Soviet bloc country. You know, this guy has more right to hate, quote-unquote, socialism than most of your average, you know, right-wing libertarian American Bitcoiners. He lived under, you know, the apparatus of state when he was growing up, and it fucking sucked. I can't remember where he was from, and I wouldn't want to sort of hazard a guess. So he was quite interested in why I would go and call myself something like the Bitcoin Socialist. And then I talked to him about it, and I said that. I said, look, okay, that's how some people thought they could bring about something like social control. Social control, socializing control, that's very important. You know, look at the word, where the word, the etymology of the word socialism, where it comes from. So you're socializing control. You're taking control, centralized control, and then you're socializing it. And when I explained the dictionary definition, that it's someone who advocates, and you can Google this, please Google socialism defined. And it's the advocating that the means of production should be owned or regulated by the community as a whole. And he was interested in that. And actually, he's for a while, he's been trying to get me to do like a debate with someone like Giacomo Zucco or some kind of quite far right, you know, Bitcoiner, who I also get on with. He's a nice guy, you know. And there was some talk about doing like a Stephen Levera one when we did it, but I kind of chickened out because I was like, no, I don't know, man. It sounds too brutal. But he's, you know, he's someone who's kind of interested. He's like, oh, okay, cool. Like, he can recognize that what I'm saying actually does make some sense. And actually, I mean, he may not agree with what I'm saying, but he understands that other lefties who think like me can also see value in Bitcoin. And that isn't a bad thing, you know. We're not the sort of Stalinist lefties who want the state to seize control and then send all the, you know, doctors into the field. We're a group of lefties who just want that. We just want socialized control. We just want decentralization, decision making by consensus, all the good stuff. I have noticed some. There's been some quite positive kind of feedback, and also I think like it helps. If you like, I've made some tutorials, and I've made produce some stuff and some software. People have built on that software, and they built stuff as well. So I think it helps that, like, you know, I'm kind of making something as well. You know, that they can see I am contributing some value. Like, if they hate my politics, then they might like something else I'm doing, and that might be a way to infect them with the socialist bug.
Yeah, definitely.
In saying that, though, I mean, I think. I have kind of been blocked and muted into a corner on Twitter. I've kind of hit the ceiling when it comes to, like, say, the amount of followers I can get, because there is a large proportion of the Bitcoin Twitter community which has just blocked and muted me and, like, into non-existence. So that kind of sucks, because some of them, you know, I like, and we kind of get on in on other topics. So I noticed that a lot of people. Pardon?
And they still blocked you on Twitter.
And they still block me on Twitter. Yeah, but I mean, often it's kind of, I mean, they spend all day kind of having that circle jerk, don't they? And like agreeing with everybody. Yeah, and we all think the same thing politically. And then someone comes along and then challenges them, but in a way which isn't like unreasonable. I think that they just don't want to go there. They're like, yeah. I've had a few blocks or, you know, a few conversations which have been like, clearly they're losing ground on the discussion. You know, if they're trying to argue that you can only have liberty in a capitalist with, you know, the capitalist mode of production, and then you just point out that capitalism favors the capitalist, and if you have a centralized, well, feudal lord essentially who owns the capital. You can't have, for the workers can't have liberty. They can't, you know, they're working for that person, and then they're giving that person some of their surplus.
Yeah.
So you'll have an argument with them on sort of a topic like that, for example. And any, most of those kind of like lefty topics, if you just kind of like let the argument evolve, eventually, you know, it's quite hard to argue against, I don't know, community control over something, if it's done in like a non-violent way, like something like a cooperative, you know, voluntary freedom of association. It's quite hard to kind of argue against that. So I think then they just block me because it's just easier to block me rather than either agree with me and have to change how they think about something.
What fucking snowflakes, huh?
Not exactly. Yeah, they're the So you yourself, when did you like start, you know, raising the lefty flag? When was that?
Only about, I read a similar thing. I mean, I think like this was, I don't know, four or five months ago, something like that. But yeah, I mean, I saw the gap in the market, so to say, and I thought there needed to be more of a, you know, a clearer space for people on the left who are in crypto and blockchain, and to give them a platform to speak, and just for me myself to write down my own opinions and write those articles, just to get content out and to make those connections.
Yeah, nice.
But so then I would say that, you know, we have the, on one side, we have the right attacking us, but then also, I mean, occasionally, at least in my experience, socialists, you know, being extremely averse to Bitcoin or to blockchain and cryptocurrency in general. So just curious about your thoughts on that and why you thought there was this sort of mutual skepticism.
Yeah, I mean, I've said this to a lot of Bitcoiners in the past, particularly ones I've had kind of like a very heated debate with. And I've said, look, you know, if you think this is a heated debate, you want to see me debating some of the commies and the socialists, because those guys, most of them are terrible with computers, for one. Something about people on the left, they tend to be crap at computers. So trying to convince them, well, first you've got to educate them on like free open source software, you know, and the Free Software Foundation, the work Richard Stallman did, you know, that there was proprietary control over something and they wanted to take control. The best way to take control was to build a new system where they had control and then like, you know, secure that system through like copyleft licensing of software. And then you kind of need to work then through the history of free and open source software and then end up at Bitcoin and then start to explain Bitcoin to them. Because they see something like Bitcoin as just money, you know, and it's just filthy, greed-orientated money, which is all about Lambos and trading. And, you know, maybe they do a quick Google for Bitcoin and they find someone like Saifedean's book, I don't know, claiming this is Bitcoin. I think that's also very important, actually. Like, I would never claim that, you know, this is my opinion, is what Bitcoin actually is, that this is Bitcoin. I mean, you've got kind of a broader understanding in relationship with, say, cryptocurrencies and kind of what you call blockchain. I just pretty much focus on Bitcoin, so I'll just say Bitcoin. So I think that's quite a dangerous stance to take, because, I mean, the software always evolves and changes, for one. But then also, you know, if you try and kind of indoctrinate or create a belief structure around Bitcoin as a protocol, then you're going to have people coming along and saying, well, this is, you know, I think I can associate say my left ideas to Bitcoin as well. And then I think that's often why they get like kind of really gets their shit up and they end up on that back foot, is because they just didn't expect someone to kind of challenge their opinion. But if you're talking about like free and open source money, which you want kind of to be the backbone of future society, you have to appreciate that a large proportion of future society like the idea of community control and like the idea of something like, I don't know, universal access to education, healthcare. So the world is not going to just become what you would call free markets. And actually something like Bitcoin is just designed to destroy a free market. So I am waffling, so I think it's quite an important point. I actually don't want to lose it, but people often call something like Bitcoin like a free market money, but it's not. It's a free market money killer. I mean, that's what we're trying to make it to be. Like, we don't want a free market money. we want a free market of money, which Bitcoin can exist in. And then Bitcoin becomes the very best it can be of money. And then it destroys the free market, just like any good free and open source, community-driven software projects. Look at something like Wikipedia. Like, you can have a monopoly, but if it's free and open source monopoly where the community can have control over that system, then it's not really a bad monopoly. Like, you know, if you have something like, you know, say if Microsoft, say if their software was the backbone of the internet and ran all web servers, and that would kind of suck because Microsoft's a proprietary company, have sort of centralized control. But the reality is that, you know, Linux is the backbone of the internet, and that's actually where what the internet gets right. You know, most web servers are Linux based. And there's a monopoly over how the internet is, you know, the web servers running internet. But it's kind of a monopoly no one complains about because it's controlled and regulated by the community as a whole. So people know that that is better than proprietary centralized control on a system. But again, you know, when you're talking to people on the left trying to explain that to them, like, what free and open source software is. I mean, in fact, the ones who do understand free and open source software, they are more susceptible to understanding why Bitcoin would be good and would be better. I think also as well, like, you have to wait for these things to find commodity use. Like, a lot of Bitcoiners know that, you know, Bitcoin is, you know, we're using it as money, just like you can use gold as money. But actually gold has a whole bunch of commodity uses. And those commodity uses, so that's where, you know, Marx would, he believes that any good money would be a commodity first and foremost, because it needs to be exchangeable with, you know, other commodities, for example. I don't think we found them for Bitcoin yet. I think Microsoft are now doing some work on decentralized identities and stuff on Bitcoin blockchain. And I think there's a whole bunch of other projects within sort of cryptocurrency world, which are trying to find more commodity type use cases. But I think that might attract maybe the older lefty intelligentsia into something like Bitcoin. And I have heard some quite, you know, well-established lefties talk not unfavorably about Bitcoin, or mention something, a system which is kind of describes Bitcoin. You kind of think, oh man, if only I could speak to you now and shout Bitcoin at you, or, you know, or blockchain or whatever. So yeah, I ranted and I waffled.
I think it was a good point that you made earlier about like the goal of, if you listen to a lot of like Bitcoin maximalists, you hear them talking about using Bitcoin to replace fiat. Right. And that's really, I mean, fiat is, I mean, that's pretty much all money right now is fiat money, yeah, for the most part. So that is pretty much, you know, if there's just Bitcoin, then there is no free market, which is pretty, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that before.
Yeah, it's the free market. I say this often, it's funny as well, because I say, oh, you say Bitcoin's free market money. No, it's not, it's the free market money killer. And it's actually, that's what they want. They want it to kill the free market.
That's fair.
And if you have, like, so say if you had the Amazon, you know, like we spoke about before, and that, because we have this monopoly now, Amazon, and most people understand it's not great, you know, this Jeff Bezos guy making all this money. It works and you get decent, cheap products, but there could be probably a better system where more people would have liberty. And a decentralized version of that system would be better. I think if it was de-Amazon, if you think we had de-Amazon now, I don't think people would complain. I think people would encourage that service to just grow and grow and grow, because it's, you know, it's a fairer system.
I was just curious about, I know you've been working on some stuff on some point of sale terminals and things like that. So I was curious if you can talk a little bit about the projects that you're working on right now.
Yeah, so I think that Andreas did a really good quote, and it was, if there's a world in which the Internet of Things is owned by Amazon or owned by, you know, your Google, and all your data is owned by them as well, then that world's kind of going to suck and it's going to be dystopian. If there's a world where the users have control and have autonomy over the hardware and the software, then that Internet of Things type future, futurist idea of what the world could become, it could be a good thing. In order to get there, though, we need more control over the hardware and we need more control over the software, which is why, I mean, with free open source software, you can verify code. You can go on their Git and check out their code and
You can even make suggestions and contribute to the code if you want to. And if you can find kind of consensus, get it merged in, whatever. I think there's a whole bunch of kind of like hardware out there which is being developed for makers and DIYers and engineers and hackers. And I think that more and more people are kind of getting autonomy and the ability to kind of build their own stuff, you know, and take control over hardware. And I think that's better. And you can, we can't continue kind of a hardware path where some centralized service has access to all our information because we can't see the software behind the piece of hardware. And then the hardware itself may have proprietary parts in which we don't know how the inner workings of and can be feeding data back to wherever. We need like free and open source hardware. We need hardware which is auditable. If not free and open source, like just auditable, like we can take it apart, we can have a look at it, we can understand how it works. And in order to kind of have that relationship with, say, hardware, for example, you kind of need a community of builders and makers and all that sort of stuff. And I think that's getting better. So I started, and also when you talk about like, you know, banking the unbanked, it's quite cool, the idea. So one of my projects, The Quickening, is a free and open source point-of-sale terminal, which you can build yourself. And the components cost like under $8. Wow. So someone in, you know, I mean, it's still a free and open source project and it still needs kind of a lot of work. But there's people contributing to it. People like Quibono and CryptoCloaks, they've developed like an amazing little 3D printed box for it. There's another guy in San Francisco, Ken, who also developed another really nice 3D printed box solution. And there's people who've like improved on the software, which I made as well. But yeah, it's a free and open source point of sale terminal. You could build it for under $8. The same principles of building that terminal as well. You could just carry across and take the hardware and then install it into, say, a vending machine or, I don't know, an automated beer tap or coffee machine, whatever. That is it gives someone in some poor part of the world who maybe becomes reliant upon some decentralized value transfer system like Bitcoin, for example, gives them the ability to just kind of build one of these devices themselves with a little bit of work, or, you know, rope someone in they kind of know is kind of a little bit technical. It's not, you know, I do a workshop for The Quickening and then we cover pretty much everything we need to cover in like an hour. It's not the most complicated project. It's not the most complicated thing to build. But then you also know that when you build it, you know the hardware which is going into making that device. You know it's auditable. You know as well that there's no kind of, what's it called? Oh, when you put an attack, there's an attack vector in the manufacturing process of like hardware. Say if you're making like a Bitcoin wallet, for example, then supply chain, there's no supply chain attack.
Yeah.
Which is kind of being put into the hardware. So you have control over the hardware and you have control over the software. And then lo and behold, when you have a level of control over the hardware and software and you've actually learned to build this thing yourself, you start thinking, yeah, I could tweak it here, I could tweak it there, I could do this, I could do improve it there. And then you start contributing back to the community of people building these little point of sale terminals. So I was very keen on education, people getting control over these bits of hardware, also just exploring, like, you know, we talk about particularly something like the Lightning Network, you can send real small transactions, microtransactions. You can have money streaming. And to have IoT devices or smart devices being able to send value to each other is quite exciting. And I also thought that maybe it could be an on-ramp for, say, the Arduino community when they realize that, you know, these little bits of hardware they're tinkering with could be sending and receiving value, you know, very small amounts of value. You know, you pay some money and then you turn something on for an amount of time. I was just interested in that and I just kind of wanted to explore that and then like encourage other people to like explore it as well. And also, like, I always reiterate that I'm just a hobbyist. Like, my code's for shit. My projects are really goofy. Contributors are very, very welcome always. And as a hobbyist, if I can do it, then anyone else can do it. You know, it's not, I'm not like in an ivory tower. I'm not like some trying to sell myself as some crazy, you know, developer. I'm just a hobby. I'm just someone tinkering around at home. Yeah. This stuff is easy enough for people to pick up and start building their own cool bits and bobs. And that's how we have that better future where users have control over the hardware.
So Quickening is your main project you're working on?
No, so I got a whole bunch. So there was the Quickening, and then, well, that was first. So originally there was the 121, which was just kind of like a sweet machine with a little e-ink display, and you could pay it and it would spit sweets out. And then I then added the keypad, and that became the Flux Capacitor, which is like a goofy, like e-paper point of sale device. And then I realized that you can buy a pretty nice functional device called an M5 stack, which has kind of a key button thing. Like, I think it's meant for a calculator, but you can repurpose this thing. It's got microcontroller inside of it. And it's, you know, it's all free and open source hardware, or auditable hardware at least. You can repurpose it and turn it into one of these point of sale devices. It's got a nice little dock for charging it, and they're like 40 quid or something, so it's still very reasonable. And then I realized you could do a better version of the Quickening, of the Flux Capacitor, which I then called the Quickening, which is like the under $8 point of sale. It's got a little TFT screen instead of a e-paper screen, which brings the price down. But then I also used the microcontrollers to build, you know, things like mesh networks, for example, which I think is very relevant to decentralized value transfer systems. You don't want to have to just rely upon something like the internet. You want to have some sort of system or some sort of infrastructure where you can send value through a non-centralized system like a mesh network. So, a lot of these microcontrollers, you can mesh them together and do some funky stuff. So I kind of got some experimentation with that. I also like turn these little micro. I wanted people to be able to or start building their own hardware wallets, because I think hardware wallets are too expensive, and they're also, I don't know, there's just not a community. I think that in order for it to be more secure and for more innovation to happen, I think you need a community of people building stuff as opposed to just kind of a company sitting down and trying to think of what the community wants, you know? So I've got like some hardware project, and then I've got some goofy stuff like, you know, like, I don't know, like a price checker, which will just give you the price on a nice little LED matrix or something. So just fun little projects. Trying to retrofit things to accept Bitcoin or build little devices to send and receive Bitcoin. Things which kind of complement, you know, the Bitcoin ecosystem. And it's funny, it's one of those things, like the more, it's kind of easy. You just, you know, you go check out some Arduino projects and then think, okay, cool, that looks great. I'll see if I can add Bitcoin, you know. Yeah. There's like, I found like an Arduino thing on a nice little coin mech, so you can put a coin in to, it's for arcade machines or something, kind of like, oh, cool, like I can use this to make a Bitcoin ATM. And they made like a $40 Bitcoin ATM. Where you put coins in like loose change and then you get out like some Bitcoin, you can just sap the Bitcoin out. 21's Enough's got an excellent project. He's another sort of builder maker. It's great, man. It's cool to be able to speak to other people as well who are kind of building and making things. And you find you get like a lot of good, if you go to a conference and there's loads of people there with great software, but in the real world, it's nice to have visual things. You can spend some Bitcoin, get some sweets, spend some Bitcoin, you know, and then get a claw thing to pick up a little treat and get a little treat, or play an arcade machine, or, you know, go to a vending machine and spend some Bitcoin, or get a beer from a beer tap by spending some Bitcoin. So it's nice to have like real world things using something like Bitcoin. And it gets a really good response when you take these like gadgets out and about. For anyone who's listening, like, please do like join in, like build some stuff and get involved in some of the projects, buy some of the parts, you know, like the point of sale terminal, the Quickening, you know, it's like under $8. You can buy these parts off the shelf, order them from AliExpress or get them from Amazon, maybe like spend like $10. And then you can put this thing together and there's a whole bunch of little projects you can make using the same hardware. So, you know, it doesn't cost anything. And you can sit down, you can learn. It's a really good way to learn development as well, because it's very rewarding, and the code's not that complicated. It's like Arduino code, so it's not too hard to kind of code it. It's C, but it's kind of got some little tweaks to make it a bit more easier to use. So it's a good way to learn development as well. So yeah, so great. Yeah, please, anyone listening, just get involved. Like, look into some of the projects. The GitHub is ARCBTC. That's my GitHub, and then there's like gazillions of projects on there using these little bits of hardware. So well, I can't remember what the question was, but it was, I think it was just
just the project. I was gonna ask you how should people keep up with you and help out with the projects, but Yeah, you already gave it. So you're one step ahead. But yeah, thanks a lot for spending the time and being my first guest. It's been really insightful.